Orale! Bienvenidos and welcome to the Familia FFP podcast. This is your host, Jorge Martin, Familia NFL Insider Series. And I already know this is going to be a good one because, you know, our guest, our invitado, he did my job for me last year. I didn't have to ask him any questions. He went through the whole offense and just, I was like, great, you made it easy on me. But first off, I want to make sure you are following us on YouTube. Familia FFP on YouTube, you know, hit those notifications because these are dropping on a near daily basis. You're going to get the best NFL insider information on all 32 NFL teams. So it's going to help you for your fantasy drafts, Familia. So get ready. And speaking of drafts, get to underdogfantasy.com. If you haven't already made a deposit, your first deposit, you will get matched up to the first $100. Underdog Fantasy, it's best ball season, Familia. Make sure you're getting your, you know, you're getting your drafts in, get lots and lots of practice. And you know what? You might win some money in the end. Underdog Fantasy, and make sure you use the promo code Familia23, Familia23, if you want to do it in Spanish. So get in there, Familia. And as I mentioned, Familia, our invitado is, he's one of the authorities when it comes to New York Giants football. And he's been covering the team since 1983. He's with WFAN, Giants.com, the Big Blue Kickoff Live. He's one of the hosts. Just it was such an honor to talk to him and chop it up with him. He gave me a great LT story. I know he's got so many LT stories that he can't tell, that if you stacked them up, they'd be as high as the Empire State Building. So, but hey, let's welcome in our buen amigo, Paul Dottino. Welcome, Paul. Thank you for joining us. Muchas gracias.
Yes, good morning. Very nice to be with you again. And I think those stories, Michael, even higher than the Chicago Tower when we're talking LT. Let me tell you that right now.
Oh, man, I love it. I love it. I love it. Well, it was, yeah, Familia, if you missed it last year, go back and it's archived. Go back and watch that story. It was a really good one. But, well, Paul, looking at 2023, it's... you know, before we started, things are a little bit different, you know, in Giants country. Brian Daboll going into the second year, Mike Kafka's second year as the offensive coordinator. And now we got a little bit of a glimpse of what Daniel Jones could be. And, right. You know, he had 20 total touchdowns last year. Is there a next step for Daniel Jones?
Well, I think what the Giants really want to see out of him are a whole lot more explosive plays. You know, the Giants' offensive line was sporadic in pass protection last year. They expect Evan Neal, their rookie right tackle from last season, who had a lot of injury troubles, to progress in year two, much like Andrew Thomas did when he was on the left side a couple of years back. And so they think that will help the pass pro. They obviously got themselves a center in the draft and John Michael Schmitz out of Minnesota. So with the addition there at center, and the improvement of Neal, they think that those are two huge components that will make Jones a lot more comfortable, give him a lot more time. They expect that Barkley's going to be here. I don't think there's anybody in the Giants building that's thinking Barkley's going to hold out and not be a Giant week one against Dallas. So you have him in the backfield, and then you look at the wide receiver and tight end rooms, which they have really enhanced, not just with speed, but with skill. And you'd have to be blind not to look at this situation and say, my God, Daniel Jones has so much more around him than he did last year. It would virtually be impossible for him to not put up bigger passing numbers. And we were talking before the program, and your fans should know this. For the last several years, I've basically told all the fantasy people who call me, listen, I don't play fantasy myself, but if I did, I wouldn't touch anybody except Saquon Barkley on this Giants offense. Well, now you've got some Giants you might want to think about. And I think, you know, Daniel Jones is certainly a viable option now. And quite frankly, besides Barkley, the other true big stat guy on this offense to me is tight end Darren Waller, who's had 2,000 yard seasons in the past with the Raiders and gone to the Pro Bowl. To me, he's going to be the Giants' 1,000 yard receiver. Now, they've helped the receiving room, and those guys are going to be fine. But I think Waller's the guy who's going to go over 1,000 yards and maybe catch 6, 7, 8 touchdowns. He's going to be your fantasy player's play.
Oh, I love Waller. I love Waller this year. And you know, one of the things that hasn't been talked about a lot, Mike Kafka, the offensive coordinator is coming over, who's going into his second year. He helped build those offenses around Travis Kelce. And so I'm sure there's going to be some concepts. You're smiling right now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We've already seen it. We've watched all the summer practices, the OTAs, the mini camp, and it's quite clear. Darren Waller is going to be all over the field. You will see him line up everywhere. You will see him in motion. You will see him with his hand on the ground in line. You'll see him in the slot. There's nothing they will not do with Darren Waller except probably ask him to throw a pass.
And you know what? If with him, it's like you just want health for him. Just want him to stay healthy, get 17 games out of him, because I think you get 17 games out of him and it's just going to be sky's the limit. And it's, oh, I'm pumped for him. I'm pumped for him. A quick question about Jones. You know, you mentioned explosive plays. Is he... still, I mean, you know, more explosive plays in the passing game because he threw for 3,200 yards last year. He ran for 708 yards last year and 7 touchdowns. Does it look like there's going to be the same amount of running that he's going to do, or could they be scaling it back to emphasize the passing game?
They clearly want to keep his running component as part of the offense. They know that, much like with Josh Allen up in Buffalo, when you've got a quarterback who is a threat to run, it adds headaches to the defense. So I do think he will continue to run some. Now, I want to say last year, you can double check me on these numbers. He ran an average of over 7 times a game to compile those 700 plus rushing yards. In my opinion, I don't think he should be running more than 4 times a game. That's my comfort zone for a quarterback. Even a guy who's got legs like he does. I would prefer. And I don't know until the full offense is in place and we get to see them in games this year. I would prefer that they cut back on his running some. I think it's okay to use it in key spots. I think it's okay to use it as a threat. But I think, for me, I like escapable quarterbacks. And I hope the Giants wind up feeling that way with Daniel, because I think quarterbacks who rely too much on running the ball for yardage are putting themselves in harm's way, much like RG3 did years ago. And quite frankly, Lamar Jackson, okay? I think quarterbacks who run too much for yardage put themselves in a very risky position, and I think that teams are going to be more sorry than they ever have before when these guys get hurt. I mean, Russell Wilson cut down on his running for yardage as the years went on in Seattle, realizing that that's not a good idea if you plan on playing in this league at a high level for a long time. And I would like to believe that the Giants will cut down on that. Now, what I believe myself, and I hope the Giants adopt this philosophy, I don't mind mobility and I don't mind escapability. Fran Tarkenton was the king of all scramblers, right? But Fran ran around to buy time to throw. Fran did not necessarily want to run for yardage. It was all about buying time and extending plays. I don't mind, and I think Daniel Jones will still use his mobility in that way to extend plays and to buy time. I don't think that's going to stop at all. I think the Giants want to emphasize that even more. But in terms of actually running for yardage, if he runs for 700 plus yards again this year, to me, that is a mistake. And they're taking too many chances with him. And I would be very disappointed, because that means either Barkley did not have a good season, or those receivers and tight ends that we were kind of hoping were going to kick some butt did not do well. So I don't know. You want a number for him fantasy wise? I think he can throw for 4,000 yards. And maybe if he runs for 400, you know, be happy with that. Now, what I can't really talk about, because I don't know, how many touchdowns will he run for?
Yeah.
That I don't know, because when he gets down into the deep red zone, he is certainly still going to be a threat to run the ball. There's no doubt about that. He might run for six or seven touchdowns. Who knows?
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, hopefully 4,000 yards for him. I mean, he was a top 10 quarterback for fantasy last year. And, you know, with 3,200 yards, can you imagine? I mean, I can only imagine what it would be if he could throw for 4,000 yards. And actually, if he's going to do that, it's not just going to have to be Waller. I think it's going to have to be, I mean, those wide receivers. Let's get into those wide receivers, because there's a lot of underrated guys in there. I mean, Isaiah Hodgins, Darius Slayton both had their moments last year. Wandale Robinson coming off of an injury. And you got the rookie Jalin Hyatt, the Fred Biletnikoff Award winner.
Yeah.
Can you give me kind of an idea, you know, one or two guys who could step up out of this group?
Well, that's the beauty of it right now. The room is so much more improved than it was last season in terms of speed, route running, and yards after the catch ability. That's what makes this receiving core so much more dangerous. And again, we got to continue to mention Darren Waller at tight end is yes. going to be a big part of that. Okay. Looking at these receivers, Slayton was in the doghouse at the beginning of the season, worked his way out, and was very productive in the second half of the year. Mm-hmm. This is a guy who's averaged 15 yards a catch. You know, he's legit. He's a legit deep guy. You know, you mentioned Hyatt. I thought when Hyatt came out of Tennessee, third-round pick, I thought he would primarily be a slot receiver. But as I watched him during the spring, I've learned that's not the case. He's a boundary guy. He can be a big play boundary guy. Now, why? For a couple of reasons. He certainly has the jukes, and he's got the speed and the quickness and the moves and the hands. But the other thing he's got, when he was at Tennessee, he played at about 173 pounds. In the spring with the Giants, he was practicing at over 180. And he's already told the Giants he wants to play week one at 190. Now, think Wow. about that for a second. That's more than 15-pound difference from where he was playing at Tennessee, which is why when I watched his tape at Tennessee, I thought he was going to be a slot guy because I thought he was too slight and that the bigger, physical, stronger corners on the outside in the National Football League would beat him up and he would not necessarily be able to function like the Giants want him to. Well, as it turns out, he understood. And so by bulking up, and it doesn't look like from the eye test, he hasn't lost any speed. By the way, let's make something clear about Hyatt. Not only is he blazing fast, but the thing about him that makes him probably more dangerous than some guys who had a little bit of better 40 times is his play speed. Yes. Now, when we talk about play speed, we know that when these guys put on those X number of pounds of equipment every game, it slows them down. You know, they take the 40 time at the combine in shirts and shorts. We call them the underwear Olympics, right? Well, here's the thing. When you put all that stuff on and now you're playing in a game, that 40 time is a hell of a lot slower with Hyatt. I think his time speed is a lot closer to his play speed. Mm-hmm. Than other receivers who have faster times than him. I hope I explained that well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
So Hyatt will be a dangerous threat anywhere on the field. He could play any of the three receiver positions, and I didn't think so coming out, and I think that's why he dropped to the third round, because I think a lot of people expect that he'd just be a slot guy. I don't think so anymore after what I've seen. That's a big deal. You mentioned Isaiah Hodgins. Came to the Giants in October off waivers from Buffalo. Nobody knew, really. Now, his last year at Oregon State, he had over 1,000 yards. He was a legitimate big play guy. But, you know, he was injured, and he was deep on the depth chart in Buffalo. They gave up. The Giants pick him up because of their Buffalo connections. And look at what he did. He was a very, very strong receiver during the second half of the season. So, obviously, that's going to be really good. Now, you mentioned Wandale Robinson. Him and Sterling Shepard are coming off serious injuries last year yes. that ruined their seasons. It would not shock me. In fact, I think they'll probably start training camp on PUP. And it would not shock me if that extends even into the regular season a couple weeks. They want to be very careful with those guys. The Giants have one of the most conservative, if not the most conservative, medical staff in the National Football League. They will not bring a guy back before his time. So don't be shocked if Shepard and or Robinson are not on the week one active roster, but start on PUP. And it may take them a couple weeks before they actually get activated with a jersey. So that's one thing to keep in mind. The other item that we've totally forgotten about here is that they signed Paris Campbell from the Colts, yes, who last season had his first healthy season in the NFL after being injury-riddled throughout his short time in Indianapolis. Guy caught over 60 balls. Now, he only averaged about 9.5 yards a catch. He was not much of a threat guy. I think the Giants are going to use him a ton in the slot. Excellent route runner, excellent hands. And I do think he could be used much more deeper than what he was used at with the Colts. I think he's a more of a deep threat than they showed. So he's another big component to what they're going to do. And then the other receiver spot, wow. Honestly, they've got so many guys to choose from. I'm not even sure who's going to make the 53. But for argument's sake, let's just pick the most accomplished guy on the rest of the wide receiver roster, and that would be Jamison Crowder, who, when he was with Washington and the Jets, was also a special teams guy, you know, doubled on specials. So he provides double value. So I'm going to give him a little bit of a nudge up on the other receivers and just say, for the purposes of this conversation, he's the last active wide receiver in week one. He is a very accomplished slot receiver in the National Football League. He's been around a number of years. He's very sharp and wily and crafty, and he's got quicks and he's got hands. And quite honestly, when he was with Washington for several years before he went to the Jets, he used to cut up the Giants defense like a knife on Thanksgiving. I mean, he would slice and dice them. He was such a pain in the butt. And I'm sure the Giants remember that, and that's one of the reasons why he's here. So just think of the weaponry we just talked about. And that doesn't even include the fact that Saquon Barkley was not utilized as much in the passing game last year as I thought he was going to be. Remember, he caught 91 passes as a rookie. And then last year, didn't even catch 60. So there's a lot of reasons to believe that the Giants' aerial attack is going to be much more fruitful. So Jones's numbers should go up, but I still think their only 1,000-yard receiver is going to be the tight end, Darren Waller, and those other receivers in the receiving room are going to have to split the cake up a little bit.
Yeah, I love, you know, and I love that they're, you know, talking about big playability with them. And I think you gave me the most insider view of Jalin Hyatt there, talking about how they're going to be using him all over the place. And because he was a guy who was very intriguing to me, obviously, you know, they definitely went on the map after that Alabama game. So
the Giants too.
Yeah. So I think there's going to be a lot of splash games for several of these guys. So that's going to be interesting, but yeah, you're right. Waller is going to, I'm recommending Waller as the number one guy even more after talking to you. So you touched on Saquon, you know, everything's expected that he's going to be in. I mean, so let's focus on the season. Over 1,600 yards last year, as you mentioned, 57 catches last year, 76 targets total. When you're talking, is he still going to be, you know, kind of like the focal point of this offense?
Yeah, it still runs through him. Let's not kid ourselves, because, you know, when you look at Saquon Barkley, you're looking at a guy because of his dual threat ability to hurt you in the run game and in the pass game. And by the way, as a runner, he can hurt you between the tackles or outside. So he's not just a one-trick pony as a runner. I do think the one area where they may cut back a little bit on him is third down. They drafted Eric Gray out of Oklahoma, who is a really, really talented back. Gray reminds me an awful lot of Ahmad Bradshaw, but without the long speed. You know, Bradshaw could break off a 50 or 60 yard touchdown run once he got through that second level. Gray doesn't quite have that long speed, but he actually has better quicks to the hole than Bradshaw did. Physically, same stature. He's got really good hands. He's not afraid to pick up the blitz. He's a tough cookie and very smart player. The legs just don't stop when the ball is hiked. He just keeps those things churning. And again, he's got really good quicks through the hole. So I think if the Giants are going to try to enhance Barkley's durability by cutting back on his overall snap workload, I think what you'll see is on maybe some third downs, because Gray, to me, what I saw in the spring, he is capable right now. He is already capable of taking a third down package in this league. Now, I wouldn't make him the featured back quite yet. No, maybe that comes down the road. But right now, he could be a rotational third down back. So I think that would be a way to give Barkley a little bit of a rest on some occasions. Let's say it's third and nine. Well, you know what? Maybe you throw Gray in there, you know, and this way you give Barkley that little bit of a blow, get him to the sideline, say, okay, pal, you know, you've had 3-4 carries in a row. Let's get you out of there. So I think Barkley will still get his touches, and it would not shock me overall if he still has almost 2,000 yards of total offense. That still would not shock me, but I think they'll be selective in terms of when they substitute out for him. You see, one of the things that I think the Giants are going to be so much better, not only on offense and so much more explosive, which should give them more opportunities to move the ball downfield and score. But I also think the defense is a lot better, especially their rush defense. And I think their pass rush will be better. Look, this is going to be a much better team than what you saw make the playoffs last year. So that should give the offense more opportunities to possess the ball with a lead and then allow them to do more of what they want to do. Give them more freedom, if you will, because you won't have to be chasing people in tight games. So it might give them a little more leeway to give Barkley some rest here and there, but I still think he's going to be just about a 2,000-yard all-purpose back.
Wow. And yeah, and going off, I mean, right now in fantasy drafts, he's going in the second round. I mean, that's a bargain right there if you get that kind of production from him. I mean, yeah, it's more of the same. He's still in his prime. You know, those 2 years where he battled injuries, you know, kind of like took some carry, you know, saved some bullets for him. So now all of a sudden,
Make that case. And here's what I want to make clear. Even though he may not catch a whole lot more passes, I think he's going to average much more yards per catch than he did last season. That was a paltry number he put up last year. Okay. They'll run him when he does catch balls, because of the way that the passing game is going to open up defenses and force defenses to be on their heels and to spread the field more. Maybe Barkley on some of these dump offs, the flares and the checkdowns, he will have more space to operate. So I think he will average more yards per catch, which is how he's going to get that yardage number up. He may not catch more than 63, 64, 65 passes maybe, but his average yards per catch is going to be up there over 10 yards a catch, I think. I really do. He's going to make a lot more big plays this year in the passing game.
Outstanding. Outstanding. You touched a little bit on the offensive line going into this season. PFF has him rated as number 29. But it going in, you got the anchor with Andrew Thomas, the Giants, I'm sure ecstatic what they got with him.
Sure.
Evan Neal, it was a mixed bag rookie year, and now you got a rookie at center. Are those two the most key players on the offensive line going into 2023?
Well, they know what Andrew Thomas is. Obviously, yeah. Second team all NFL last year. He's one of the top five tackles, and that's conservative in the National Football League. They believe that Evan Neal, and he had a host of injuries last season. We know about the sprained MCL that cost him 4 games. Okay, but he was also banged up a lot worse than that during the course of the season. And you know how NFL coaches kind of keep some of those things under the covers a little bit. That kid not only went through rookie growing pains, he went through a lot of bumps and bruises. And so he trained a little bit during the offseason. I don't know if you remember the all-pro offensive lineman from the Bengals and Ravens, Willie Anderson, who played a lot of years in this league. He went to school with Willie Anderson for a little bit during the offseason to also enhance his technique, specifically in pass protection. So that's a big deal. The other big deal for him is that when he was at Alabama, he had played all both sides of the offensive line and kept flip-flopping and also played little guard. When he came to the Giants as a rookie, they immediately flopped him from left tackle where he was in college and said, well, we don't need you. We got Aaron Thomas over there. You're going to have to play the right side. And it had been a while since he had played right tackle. So he also said, believe it or not, it was hard for him to acclimate back to the right tackle spot again. So you had a change in position. You had bumps and bruises. You had rookie growing pains. All three of these things combined to kind of sabotage his rookie season a little bit. So they are very, very, very optimistic that he's going to be able to put forth the kind of talent that he owns on the field and show everybody that he is a quality tackle in this league and will be for a long time. He's healthy, and that's a big deal. All right, so those are your tackles. John Michael Schmitz is a plug-and-play center out of Minnesota. He trained for years because he happens to be very close friends with another former NFL offensive lineman, Alex Boone, who spent a lot of years with the Minnesota Vikings. I talked to Alex when the Giants drafted Schmitz, and Alex told me the guy is an absolute pit bull at center. He's a former wrestler, okay, which also, as you know, in the trenches, that's a big deal with leverage and technique. He really understands how to use his power, how to use his weight, how to use his hands, okay? Yeah, offensive linemen use their hands. They don't want to tell you that, but they do, okay? So this is all critical to him adapting quicker to the NFL than maybe another rookie might because he's got such an advanced skill set. But even more importantly, Alex Boone said to me, this kid's mental capacity is off the charts. He already acts like a five-year veteran. He is so smart. He understands so much. He anticipates so well. Could not gloat enough about him. And so the Giants believe he's plug and play. So unless something happens injury-wise or for some reason he doesn't show an immediate readiness in training camp, he's probably going to start week one against the Dallas Cowboys. So they feel really good about him. He will have some growing pains. Obviously, all rookies do. But I believe they think that they will be more minimalized because of his advanced mental capabilities. So that's three-fifths of the line. They got Mark Lewinsky, the veteran who they picked up offseason before last year from the Colts. He is a serviceable, functional, satisfactory, solid, if you will, right guard. Really better for the run game than he has been for the passing game, but he's a solid, steady player. They know what they're getting out of him. They're not worried. Look, I will say this. If he's your weakest link on your offensive line, if he is, you got a really good offensive line. All right? So I think a lot of people who grade the Giants from afar, they think that it's Andrew Thomas and nobody else. They're making a serious mistake. At left guard, they would like Joshua Ezeudu, second-year player out of North Carolina, to win that job. He is a big, athletic, powerful bulldozer of a man who, when he locks up on you, forget about it. Now, last year, he was a rookie. Excuse me. He had played all of the four of positions besides center when he was in college. Again, a player who had moved around constantly because they needed him there to win games at the NCAA level. So he was a jack of all trades and a master of none. When the Giants took him in the third round, we may have talked about this last year. There was a former pro scout who consulted with him before the draft and asked him about coming out. And basically what he was told is, you'll be better off if you spend one season at one position, because right now you're not polished enough, but you've got the tools. You could be a second round guard if you stay one more year in college. But he didn't want to. He didn't have the patience to stay. He also didn't think he would be allowed to stay at one position, knowing the college program that he was at. They were more concerned with winning games, not developing a pro player. So he was probably going to have to wind up moving around again. So he decided, you know what? I'll take a shot and I'll go pro. And the Giants grabbed him in the third round. Well, now he's had a full season, even though he was injured for half the year last year. At least he's had a full season in the pro system. And they basically said to him, you're a left guard. Stop thinking about all the other stuff. One position. This should help him. He also had a neck injury that went down into his shoulder, which sabotaged half of his season. That's gone. So, again, we're talking about a healthy player, more familiarity with one position, being a second-year pro. I'm not going to say he's going to turn out as good as Evan Neal, but we're talking about similar circumstances here. Very similar circumstances. They believe strongly in both players having the physical tools to be really good in this league. I think those are your starting five. The folks who want to rate the Giants as the 27th offensive line, you know what? That's fine, because that's probably rated off last season.
Right.
And the left tackle was a rotating job. When the center was a rotating job, Neal wasn't Evan Neal at right tackle. You really only had two linemen. You had Thomas and Glowinski. And the other three spots, I don't want to disrespect anybody, because there were reasons why those spots were somewhat suspect. Well, I don't think they're going to be suspect this year. So if they want to say the Giants have the 27th line, I can't wait to see the elevator that skyrockets a whole ton of positions this year when folks get a load of these guys.
No, outstanding, outstanding. Well, you touched on the defense, how you expect them to be better against the run. Kind of in the middle, decent. I mean, I think they were number 15 in passing yards allowed last year, number 28 in rushing yards allowed. Where are they going to take them? Is the big step going to be on against the run this year?
Yeah. Understand something. Wink Martindale, the Giants defensive coordinator, and everybody knows what he was when he was with the Ravens, and he's no different now. In fact, he might even be a little more aggressive even now in his mind than he was when he was in Baltimore. What I learned about Wink was very interesting. Wink doesn't care about the defensive rankings like other people do. Wink is more concerned about a couple things. He wants to know about quarterback pressure. It's not sacks. Okay, let me make something clear. The number that Wink looks at is quarterback sacks plus quarterback pressures plus quarterback hits. All three of those together, I'm sorry, it's sacks, hurries, and hits equals quarterback pressures. So there are three components to the number that becomes the quarterback pressure: sacks, hits, and then hurries. Wink wants the Giants to dominate the pressure number. Sacks are great. But as Wink will tell you, a quarterback could get pressured and throw an interception. Would you rather have the interception or the sack and lost yardage? You'd take the interception, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah.
So that's why people who just look at defenses and say, well, how many sacks did you have? That's your pass rush. Wink doesn't believe that. Wink believes that it's the pressure number not the sack number that he wants to win. And I believe if you look at last year's National Football League statistics, I want to say the Giants were top five in the NFL in pressure number. Not sacks, but pressure number. That's what Wink wants. The other thing that Wink wants, he wants to own the red zone. He's not so much concerned with how much yardage happens between the 20s. He wants to win in the red zone because that's how you stop touchdowns. Ultimately, when you force a team to settle for three, you have an advantage. He did that last year very, very well. And of course, the other thing is, how do you do on third down, which is how you get the ball back? Wink would rather win red zone defense, quarterback pressures, and third down than he would total yardage or average yards per carry. The Giants gave up over 5 yards a game on the ground last year. 5 yards a carry on the ground. Think about that for a second. That would make Parcells have nightmares and throw up. The idea was always to limit your opponent to about 3.5. That used to be the standard. But Wink Martindale looks at that number. He's like, yeah, you know, we'd like to do better in that number. But as long as they win the other categories, that's where they want to win. Giants made the playoffs last year with 9 wins and then won a game on the road in Minnesota. How'd they do it? They did it by winning Wink's categories, okay? Not winning a fantasy football category. They won Wink's categories. So when you grade the Giants' defense, you have to understand how they look at the prism. It's different than most people will look when they just look at the overall total defense or the running yards per carry. The other thing you have to consider is that the Giants, because of what they perceived as a little bit less speed on defense than they wanted, they played a ton, even more so than usual, of sub-packages, which meant smaller players, faster players on the field, which allowed teams to bully them a little bit more and run the ball. But again, Wink was like, I'm not giving you that big play in the passing game. I'd rather you run the ball. Go ahead, run the ball for 5 yards. Run the ball for 6 yards. I'm not giving up the 20-yard pass. It's all in the philosophy. So these things all have to be taken into account and in context when you talk about the Giants' defense. Now, what did they do which significantly upgraded their rush defense? They signed Bobby Okereke, the middle linebacker from the Colts, who over the last 2 years had like 280 combined tackles. All right, he's a machine. Really good player. He's a three-down backer. They hope that they will get a better year out of Kayvon Thibodeau because as a rookie last year, when he played really well down the stretch, remember, he had an MCL at the beginning of the season. So the first half of the season, he was a rookie, and he was also fighting an injury when he had to wear a knee brace, and it limited his activities. So they think that Thibodeau is going to be a big-time impact player this year. So that will help in the run game and the pass rush. Azeez Ojulari, who, if you look at his quarterback pressures and sacks, the guy has been really devastating against the pass, but he's had trouble staying on the field. He's healthier now than he's been at all during his NFL career with the Giants as he enters year 3. So they're thinking now with the bookends of Thibodeau and Ojulari, they've got a very dangerous pass rush. Combine that with the addition of Okereke in the middle of the linebacking core. They signed A'shaun Robinson, stud defensive tackle from the Rams, who is a run stopper. They signed Nacho from, they call him Nacho, the lineman they signed from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I'm blacking out on his name because we all call him Nacho. But not you could dig that, right?
Absolutely.
So, Nacho came over from the Bucs, another defensive tackle. The idea what the Giants are going to do by adding Okereke, who's a tremendous upgrade at middle linebacker, and then by adding two quality run-stopping defensive tackles, they believe now they're going to be able to rotate their defensive linemen so that you won't need Leonard Williams and Dexter Lawrence to play 90-something plus percent of the snaps every week. They'll be able to rotate them more because they've upgraded their depth and beef along the line of scrimmage. Therefore, they'll be able to use more of a rotation, thereby enhancing the efficiencies of both Lawrence and Williams. Because now, let's say those guys can play each 6 to 7 to 8 less snaps a game. They're thinking they'll be fresher. So now their snaps will be more potent. And they're not going to necessarily lose a lot, especially in the run game, when they put Nacho or A'shaun Robinson in the game. So that's a double win. You add talent with those two guys, but now you also are able to keep your starting two guys fresher. So this is what the Giants are trying to do philosophically. And that's more of what they're concerned about. Philosophically, how are they approaching this? And how do they want to use their defense through their prism to sabotage the opponent? They're not so much looking at the stats. And I know fantasy football people hate that, but that's how they're going to win games.
Well, you know what? I know they don't love that, but I love the breakdown that you gave me, because I can now look at, you know, how I deploy players playing against the Giants and like what I can expect. So, it sounds like they'll be, again, you know, they'll be better against the run, but it seems like they'll still give up some yardage there. They won't be number one in defense there. So, I mean, it could be an interesting season. I know it sounds like they're going to be tough to pass against, though.
They have two questionable issues on defense, and that is, what are they going to do at one of the safety spots, specifically the free safety spot next to Xavier McKinney? And what are they going to do with the corner opposite Adoree Jackson? Those are the two spots right now where, going into training camp, they need to have a competition. Now, the beauty of it is they've got guys who they believe are worthy, and they're going to put them out there and say, fellas, it's a tug of war. Who wants to win the job? Deontay Banks, known as Tay Banks, was their first-round pick out of Maryland. They wanted him in the worst way. Big, tough, strong, 6-foot-plus physical corner, got quicks, shadow skills, plays the run, plays the pass. What an outstanding player. They were so happy to get him in the first round. Remember, they had to trade up. They gave up a couple of third-day picks to move up one spot with Jacksonville to get Banks. They would love for him to be ready week one to start opposite Jackson, because they think that that's going to be an outstanding corner duo this year. So let's see if it works out that way. But their optimism is to the roof on Banks to solve that one question at corner. At the safety spot, that's where it's a little bit less clear. Julian Love signed with Seattle during the offseason. He was a do-everything safety for them, played multiple positions within the scheme of their defense. They've got guys who they strongly believe can compete and win that job and deserve it. Led by, they have Bobby McCain. They signed off of Washington. They brought back Belton, who was a former Iowa standout, was drafted last year, fractured his collarbone before the season, came back and played some, but then re-injured it again and was limited. But they like him a lot, and they think he could be a starting strong safety in this league. They also got Jason Pinnock, who's only been in the league a couple of years. They picked him up. He came out of Pittsburgh, was with the Jets, was a surprise cut last summer. The Giants picked him up, and he played sporadically last year. He was also injured, but they like him a lot. So between McCain, Pinnock, and Belton, they think they've got a starting strong safety between those three guys. And they might even use Nick McLeod, who was a corner last year in the spring. They used him exclusively at safety in the springtime. So they're really enhancing their competition at the safety spot. Because after all, they got Banks. They don't need McLeod playing corner. They got Banks over there now. So they said, well, let's try you at safety. So those are the two suspect positions on this defense. But I think Banks is going to be fine. The safety spot, a little less clear. But it should be. Look, here's what I'm going to tell you. The starting 22, whether it's 11 on offense or 11 on defense, there are no gaping holes on this starting unit on either side of the ball. There may be a couple spots where it's a little hazy. You know, is Azudo going to be what they think he is at left guard? Is Belton maybe going to be the guy they hope he can be at one of the safety spots? Maybe those spots are a tad hazy. But everywhere else on this roster, they believe they've got an answer.
Outstanding. Oh, my God. You gave me all the answers today, my friend. Oh, mi amigo, this was awesome. This was absolutely awesome. I could tell, you know, by the detail on the back on the defense, you spent a little time around, Bill Parcells and Bill Belichick. So I could tell just a little bit of time spent around those guys. So awesome. Well, I'm going to close it out because I could go for another hour just asking you stories on Belichick and Parcells, but we're going to save that for another podcast.
Okay.
And I'll keep you out of their doghouses. But as we kind of close it out last year with Mexican food, any new Mexican food takes or any new dishes you tried lately that you really liked?
I've been ultra conservative this year. To be honest with you, my friend, they won the playoff game against Minnesota, and since that time it's been a whirlwind because the draft came upon us. I've done a lot of college baseball. It's been kind of nice, though, to get back to normal, because let's not kid ourselves now. We're 3 years plus out of the pandemic, right? Yes. Since we had those two horrible years. And now we really feel like we're really back now. Even the government says we're totally back, right? So without getting political, I feel like we're all sprouting our wings now and kind of finally getting going again. I still haven't taken a vacation in 3 years.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I mean, as much as I know you love your work, I mean, that's the great thing. You know, if you love your work, you don't work a day in your life. So
this is true.
That's awesome. Well, you know, we got about 3 weeks until the start of training camp. What's coming out that you want to promote?
Well, no, I'll tell you what. You know, fans can watch me all the time on Big Blue Kickoff Live. During the offseason, I host 3 days a week. It's on Giants.com. We have rotating hosts, but I'm on 3 days a week. And then, of course, during the course of the season, you can catch me on the Giants WFAN radio network with all kinds of reports and on game day, obviously. Looking forward to a really fun season. You can catch me on MSG as well during the Giants programming there on MSG, the post-game show we do. And Got a lot going on. It's a marathon for me, my friend. I need to actually rest up the next couple of weeks, because once training camp starts, the pedal hits the metal and I don't get a rest until after March Madness. And even then, I still got to do some baseball. So, you know, there's not a lot of downtime in my schedule.
And we know those college baseball games can go 3-4 hours. So pretty easy. Yeah. When it's not the Friday guy, the pitching staff start to get a little thin. Oh man, you get some high, you know, some slow pitch softball game scores. So fantastic.
Indeed.
Mi amigo, I'm so grateful. Muchas gracias for doing this. This is awesome. Familia, I know you enjoyed this, especially all my friends who are big Giants fans, G-Man Jay, Greg Mettler. I mean, all my friends. I know you guys are going to enjoy this. I'm going to close up shop right now. Make sure you're going to YouTube. When you're watching this on YouTube, give us a like. Give us a subscribe. Throw a comment out there. Tell us how much you enjoyed this show. I'm going to make sure to interact with you on there. So get in there. And also go to underdogfantasy.com. Use that promo code FAMILIA23. You're going to get matched dollar for dollar up to the first $100 on your first deposit. Again, I'm Jorge Martin 17 on Twitter. You can everywhere else just put FAMILIAFFB. You're going to find it and go to familiaffp.com. Got some content coming out for you. So once again, to our invitado, muchas gracias. To you, everybody, thank you for joining us. Muchas gracias. And remember, todos somos familia. Salud.